Good morning, everybody. I'm Cindy Nicholson. I'm one of the pastors here on staff and part of the preaching team at the Evanston campus. And while it's fresh in your mind, and before I start the sermon, if you're thinking about coming back after the 11:30 service at 1 o'clock for the Start Here event, we shifted its location. It's going to be in the backstage bistro, which is straight back to the communion elements and left. So we'd love to see you there. In the 1950s, early 1950s, which was my childhood, but for some of you seems an unimaginably long time ago, a young girl named Jackie Pullinger, living in a London suburb, was in a rather dull Sunday school class where she heard a missionary speak, and she decided that God was calling her to do the work of sharing the gospel and planting new churches in other countries at the ripe old age of 4. Early bloomer. The picture she had in her head of what that actually meant was fuzzy at best and like something out of a politically incorrect cartoon at worst. But from such silly starts, many of us have launched into a lifelong direction from God for our lives. After high school and then getting a college degree in music and claiming Jesus again for herself as an adult, Jackie began writing to missionary societies offering her services. "No," they would write back, "we don't take anyone under 28. No, we don't take any women who are single. No, we don't need someone to teach oboe in North Central Africa. No, no, no." In the decision-making process, the doors were all closed, yet Jackie still felt restless and the call would not go away. One night, she had a dream in which her family members were all crowded around the dining room table looking at a map of Africa. In the middle of the different countries was a pink one. She leaned over to see what it was called. It said Hong Kong, which is not in Africa, by the way. But it was clearly highlighted to her. So she began the round of missionary society inquiries again, but this time for Hong Kong, only to be told no, no, no again. Yet she still felt convinced that God was calling her. One night, a friend she had worked with invited her to a Bible study he attended, which included the practice of listening to Jesus for each other. She sat as close to the door as possible, convinced that something was going to happen wildly out of order. Instead, what happened was someone speaking very quietly, yet she was completely sure it was meant for her. "Go. Trust me, and I will lead you. I will instruct you and teach you in the way you shall go. I will guide you with my eye upon you." That is straight from the Bible, Psalm 32, verse 8. Once again, God was guiding and confirming her decision making, but how would she know that she'd got it right? Finally, she sat down with a pastor who knew her well. She outlined the whole thing again, the call, the dilemma. God had told her clearly to go. He'd told her roughly why to go, but he had not told her exactly how or exactly where. Her pastor's response was, she said, not what she was expecting. "If God is telling you to go, you'd better go." "How can I? I don't know where to go. All my applications have been rejected." "Well, if you've tried all the conventional ways and the missionary societies and God is still telling you to go, you'd better get on the move. If you had a job, a ticket, accommodation, a sick fund, and a pension, you wouldn't need to trust Jesus. Anyone can go that way. They don't even have to be a Christian. If I were you, I would go out and buy a ticket on a boat going on the longest journey you can find and pray to know where to get off. Jackie says, I did not exactly hear bells, but this was the first time in all those months of searching that anything made sense. It sounds terrific, she said, but it must be cheating because I'd love to do that. But her pastor reminded her of Abraham, who was willing to leave his country and follow his God to a promised land without knowing where he was going, because he trusted God to be trustworthy. You can't lose if you put yourself completely in God's hands, you know. So Jackie booked passage, got on the boat, got off at Hong Kong, and began the great and perilous adventure of going to the one place in the city that other Christians would not go, into a mega slum there known as the Walled City, because it was just that. Where she began leading drug addicts, gang syndicate members, pimps, prostitutes, and thieves to Jesus, getting them off heroin without pain through the power of the Holy Spirit, and building with them a community, a network of house churches, a family of faith called the St. Stephen Society in the most unlikely of places. If God is telling you to go, you'd better go. This week, we're finishing a series on following Jesus and making decisions. If you are just coming in at this point, I encourage you to listen to the podcasts of the previous three installments. I've been at this making decisions with Jesus thing for most of my life, and I still learned new things this time. The topic we're finishing with is, rather sensibly, how will I know if the decision I've made is right? And indeed, the agony of that question is enough to stop many of us cold, unable to act on the decision we've made, wavering right at the starting line. Did I get it right? I have good news and challenging news for you. I'll start with the challenging news. Having done the best you can to make a good decision, incorporating the practical biblical wisdom that Steve and Bill and Renee have taught over the past three Sundays, you've just got to move on it without having total control over how it will roll out. I love this bit of wisdom from author Jim Manny. Decisions, even good and well-made decisions, are cloaked in uncertainty. Discernment doesn't give knowledge of the future. It doesn't say what other people are going to do in connection with your decision. It doesn't guarantee success. It doesn't even promise that the choice you make will happen at all. A decision is one step. And you don't know much about the next step and the step after that. And any decision you make is a decision just for you. It doesn't apply to anyone else. So it's important for us to make good decisions with Jesus, but having made them, it's a good idea to move forward with humility, with a certain lightness in our attitude about just how much we can control anything else. The point of making good decisions is, yes, to propel you further along the path God has for you, but it's mostly meant to draw you closer to God. There's a certain deep joy about making a good decision with Jesus, simply because in the process, you've gotten closer to Him. So if it helps, taking a little pressure off the decision-making process, you can be reassured that God's advice to you is breathe. On the flip side, the good news is that there are a few ways to spot the signs that you've made a good decision when you are beginning to panic after you've made it. Ready? Here we go. The first way you can tell you've made a good decision with Jesus is if you feel freedom. When you've made a good decision, one of the fruits should be that as you move forward, you feel free, and the fear of what if I'm wrong begins to drop away. When you've made a good decision, there is movement, there's elbow room, there's momentum. 1 Corinthians 13, 3, 17 says, "The Lord is the Spirit, and wherever the Lord's Spirit is, there is freedom." In some ways, I think I remember the decisions I had to make in high school and college the best, even though most of them were being made with a lot of protective padding around me. There were just so many of them, aren't there? It's just amazing. I remember being at a party toward the end of my senior year in high school with my classmates. Small school, all girls, 30 kids to a class. So we all fit in somebody's big family room. And somebody started passing a joint of marijuana around. This was the last of the innocent period when that was a So I was at the far side of the room, so I had a long time to make my decision. What was I going to do? I waited up as best as I could, watching it kind of move toward me, talking to Jesus about it, reviewing the decisions I'd already made about how I was going to live and not live, anxious about my choice and what other people would think, watching person after person take a toke and pass it on. By the time it got around to me, I'd made my decision. I just passed it on. I waited a few minutes, stepped out into the hall, thanked the host's mom for her hospitality, and wondered how the heck she could not smell that much weed. I found the family car and had almost driven off when a friend in my class came booking after me and asked for a ride. Until I'd moved, she'd been sort of paralyzed. Me leaving gave her cover and a little courage. And you know how we felt when we drove off? We felt free. We could move again. We felt like we could be our own people. I could tell you dozens of stories like that from high school and college, and I didn't always make the best decisions. That was one of the good ones. If you are that age and you feel like you're having to make good decisions every time you turn around, it's because you are. But experiencing that internal freedom to move forward taught me something, and it's one way that you can tell it was a good decision, even when you clunk into the attitudes of others or some negative consequences as you keep moving. The second sign that you've made a good decision with Jesus is that the people who know you best and have been trustworthy in your life can confirm your decision. Even if the impact of the decision is difficult for them or will be, they should be able to validate your decision as being a good one. Proverbs 20:18 says, "Plans are confirmed by getting advice, and with guidance one wages war." When my great-grandfather decided to sell the family farm and orchard to the city of Baltimore so they could flood it and build the reservoir that still helps sustain the city to this day, he decided to move into town to change careers by going to seminary and becoming a pastor with a wife and four children nearing college age. He counted on my great-grandmother for confirmation. When you're a farmer and both your parents are dead, there's not a big pool to draw from. But my grandmother, great-grandmother, was a very wise lady. The immediate effect of his decision on her would be pretty world-rocking. But after talking it through at length, she was able to confirm that his decision was good. With one small caveat As family lore tells it, she insisted he was not going to take an assignment in some podunk country town for his first parish. It was the city or nothing. I'd like to think she was being prophetic. He did end up in Washington, D.C. Took his turn as a chaplain to the Senate. It's one of those fun family stories. When Steve and I, my husband, were dating long distance for a year before I moved here, we spoke on the phone and wrote letters. You remember letters. One of the things we did was to let a couple here and a couple in Boston where I was, two sets of people we trusted a lot, read those letters. They had to put up with a certain amount of mush, of course. But it not only kept us accountable, but it also meant that when we decided to get engaged, people who knew the relationship well could affirm our decision, having had their opportunities to ask the tough questions of us. If you are making a decision, think about who, as Renee called them last week, are your people. The ones who you respect and who aren't too polite to question or comment. If they are able to affirm that you have made this decision as best you can and it is a good one, that's a good confirmation. A third way you can tell whether the decision you've made is a good one is this. As your life flows forward from that decision, the good fruit described in Galatians 5, 22 and 23 should begin to show up. This is what those two verses say. But the spiritual nature produces love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. If the second test, the one I just talked about, has to do with external confirmation, this one has more to do with internal fruit tasting in our lived experience. There is always a tug of war going on in us between things that look shiny on the outside but lead to all kinds of anxieties, compromises, tensions with others, and worse, and decisions that draw us closer to God and result in us getting to experience those good things in our heart and mind that we desire. If I had a dollar for every prayer request I pass along to the intercessors, asking us to pray that there be peace or kindness or joy or self-control in that person's heart, I would be a rich woman. The amazing thing is that these good fruits of the Spirit come along with decisions that are right, even if the decisions are to do difficult things, like turning down a promotion, or ending a romance you'd had high hopes for, or moving, or staying put, or stepping away from a friendship that has become toxic, or choosing the smaller, less flashy college for the sake of graduating with no or little debt. And there are dozens of these decisions in life. And this good fruit comes even if the decision is to step into a new opportunity, but the first steps, the first months or years are really rough. The fourth and final test of the rightness of a decision you've made is this, that it leads you closer to Jesus and more connected to Him. The process of making a good decision often ends up being full of surprises and zigs and zags and even U-turns. But in the process of following Jesus along that path, we end up going deeper into our relationship with God. That process of making the decision will often reveal false or incomplete pictures of who Jesus is, perhaps demanding Jesus or unconcerned. It can lay bare places in our hearts where we don't actually want to come closer to Jesus. It might reveal some less attractive or good things in our hearts that we've been trying to kick behind us while we're making this decision with Jesus. If it sometimes feels like you are the project, not the decision, you might be right. But if you stay with it, if you let Jesus take you through the hairpin turns and the places where the ride seems stuck, you will come out with three priceless things. You will have made a well-thought-out decision, you will know yourself better, and you will know Jesus and his love and trustworthiness at a much deeper level. I asked a friend of mine from this congregation, whose story I know a little, to share a piece of his story with us. God needs no help driving me through the obstacles of life, though I've tried to help him on numerous occasions. I've referred him to several respected self-help guides that are the ultimate guide for success and happy life. Needless to say, he's unimpressed. The latest leg in our journey has taken us somewhere I never imagined we'd be, self-employed. That is a compound adjective I never thought I'd use to describe myself. I'm the kind of guy who, but for my pigmentation, would fit in seamlessly as a company man in Japanese culture. You know, the kind of worker who stays where he is planted until the company replants him comfortably into retirement. Here's how it happened. After working, really toiling, suffering, dying, etc., in a corporate job, it soon became increasingly apparent that they preferred that my position be eliminated. I spent many weeks pondering what-ifs with God. Jesus, would I be happier if they laid me off? Oh, Lord, if only you would give me a few $1,000,000, I'd be happy after I get laid off. God, please get me out of this job. So when it happened, I was relieved. I was also very, very concerned. God knew my wife and I could tread water financially for a few years, but what then? Get another job like the one I had? At this, God said, and I do mean said, no. To which I responded, well, what then? This went on for weeks and then months of telephone screens, a few interviews, but mostly unresponsiveness by potential employers. Then a thought struck me. Why not do something I enjoyed? Maybe I could make a few bucks that would bridge the gap financially. Notice I didn't say self-employment. So I tried doing something other people said I was good at, editing. Absolutely hated it. Shut that business down after 3 months. Then one day, sitting on my back porch, God proposed the following. What if you start a training business? You know you enjoy helping people improve themselves, right? I replied, you know, God, you're right. I've always enjoyed public speaking and helping people grow. I wonder how much I could charge. Well, before we get to that, he interrupted, this business has to have some social benefit. You know, not only should it train people, but it should give people the opportunity to work profitably. Yeah, I like that too, Jesus. Let me fire up a spreadsheet and see how much I need to make to make the bills. You know, this could be a neat little profit if I do it right. Oh, and by the way, Jesus continued, you know that this business is mine, so you'll be a manager, and success will be measured by one thing only. By now, God had my attention. What's that, Lord? He said, when we're done with this part of the journey, here's the checklist I'll use. Did you love me with more of your heart? Did you learn to trust me with greater joy? Did you learn how to listen to me better? Did you learn how to substitute my strength for your own? And finally, did you learn to anticipate and value the prize at the end of this journey? So now I have my own training business with all the headaches and pains and frustrations that every entrepreneur has. But it helps to understand that I'm not just self-employed, I'm Jesus-employed. Yeah. So there we are. We have made our decision with Jesus as best we can. We've tested its soundness. Then that's the time to remember the wise advice that we heard at the beginning. If God is telling you to go, you'd better go. Jesus is more than happy to steer you and help you navigate obstacles and unexpected roadblocks, but you have to move yourself into gear. So if there's no don't, then do. Go. Go with Jesus. Band can come up really fast. We're going to finish with a final song.